So with that being said, let's talk about qualifying. Q1, you're in Britain. It's going to rain. It's really not that surprising of a weather pattern. The only surprising thing is that the FIA and the Formula One stewards had turned off the DRS for qualifying one. That means that they deem the track too wet, or the condition itself is not safe enough to use DRS. Now, do I agree with this option? From watching it on TV, granted I wasn't there, I wish I was, but watching it on TV, the track did look a little slick, but I didn't see any standing water. It wasn't pouring rain, but for the safety of the drivers and for the fans, which is more important, safety above all else, no DRS, which was fine. It also kind of puts the cars on a little bit more of a level playing field when there's no DRS. You can really see who can drive and who can't drive in situations like this. Q1, not really all that drama filled. The track time itself, though, a little surprising. Ambient temperature was, or trackside temperature was 27, 28 degrees, so it was still quite hot on the track. The water was evaporating at its own pace, but the cars just didn't really seem to have as much pace as they had in previous races. And this statement goes across the board for all the cars, the Red Bulls, Ferraris, Haases, McLarens, everybody. They didn't seem as fast as they normally do every weekend. I don't know if it was just my perception of it, but the track times in themselves were respectable, but the difference between the track times were not nearly as close as you normally see when the track is in peak conditions. We're talking like a second here, second and a half there, half a second there. There was no 1/1000th of a second difference in Q1, definitely not. For some of them, though, Valtteri Bottas, unfortunately, being one of them, power failure, PU just crapped out, didn't make the rest of the lap. Come to find out after that that he also got disqualified. He said it was a power unit failure. Well, you kind of need enough gas to get around the track. He ran out of gas. He did not have enough for a sample size at the end of the race, which means he needed at least a liter in the fuel cell itself to be able to take a sample. He didn't have that enough, which kind of tells me that he ran out of gas and no one told him how much gas he had. So he automatically finishes at the back of the pack come race day, automatically gets disqualified from all qualifying races, Q1, 2, and 3 for the day. He didn't make it out of Q1 anyway, so Valtteri Bottas is starting off at 20th, K-Mag 19th, Nick DeVries in 18th, Joe Guan Yu in 17th, and Yuki Tsunoda in 16th. These guys, they're trying. They really are, but the name that pops out the most to me, although he has an upgraded car, not the best car on the grid, but he's got an upgraded car now and just seems to be struggling, would be my pick for Rookie of the Year, which I have been absolutely, like, devastatingly wrong on this one, is DeVries in 18th. He just doesn't seem comfortable, not only in the car, but you hear, if you watch him and listen to him during the races, because you can follow whatever racer you want on F1 TV, if you listen to Nick DeVries, he doesn't sound that confident in the decisions of his team, of him himself. He's just questioning himself the entire time. I know he's a rookie, but he is also the most experienced rookie this season, and I think to date, to be totally honest. Another struggle for him. I really hope that he can pick it up in the race. Chin up, buddy. You're still one of the top 20 drivers in the entire world. Hopefully by the summer break, you'll put some wins together, or at least some really good, not necessarily wins, but maybe some top 10 finishes to, you know, let you stay in the seat. AlphaTauri is also known for being very short-tempered when it comes to their drivers, and short-tempered by, like, hey, you're good, you're horrible, pick it up, fix it. You're not fixing it, you're out of here. Like, it's a very short lifespan in AlphaTauri. Hopefully Nick DeVries can get that sorted out, and we'll see him in the second half of the season. Q2, weather was substantially better. The track is starting to get into itself, which means it's starting to dry out. You can see that race line where it's really dry, where the cars are going over it. A little bit more marbling on the street, which is great. Better grip, better downforce. Times were a little bit faster. Again, not nearly as fast as I thought they would be in the British Grand Prix, or as we have seen in the past, but still really good, really, really clean. Track limit violations are starting to poke their heads up again in Britain. Turn 15 is the last one before the big, like, the straightaway. Again, it's one of those massive high G-force, left to right turns. These guys are taking a massive amount of liberty when it comes to taking up as much track as humanly possible. Six track time violations, which means six track times that got deleted. Fortunately for the drivers this time, especially Checo Perez, because he's been bitten by this the most, it didn't change the outcome of qualifying times. If you made it, you made it. If you didn't, you didn't. It wasn't because your last track time got deleted and that would have put you into Q3. So these guys, strictly on merit. Bit of a surprise in Q2 going into Q3. McLaren, I know they've got all these upgrades part two, but they were an absolute rocket ship when it came to qualifying. And it's not just Lando Norris, who is the most experienced driver on that team, but Oscar Piastri as well. I don't know if all the sim training is just clicked in, or he's starting to get into his groove. He's feeling very, very comfortable. But his pace, his consistency, his determination, and just his track intelligence have definitely escalated since the beginning of the season. I can see him maybe a year or two challenging Lando Norris a little bit more and potentially taking the points lead away from him within the team. But McLaren, absolute rocket ship, makes it into Q3 quite comfortably. Unfortunately for some guys that should have made it into Q3, they definitely did not. The one that pops to mind the most, again, another, I'm not going to use the word horrible, let's use disappointing and slightly disheartening qualifying, Checo Perez. He didn't spin out, no track time deleted. He just did not have the get up and go. It didn't seem like he had pace. It didn't seem like he was trying hard. You could tell that he wanted to be as fast as he possibly could, and nobody got in his way, I think, except for himself. Just no pace, not enough intensity on the track. He ends up in 15th. Like, he barely made it out of Q1 to just barely hit Q2. Comparing him to Max, obviously, is a little bit of an unfair thing to do, but let's compare him to, hey, let's say Hamilton and Russell, who make it into Q3. They have been struggling with the Mercedes as late, and they seem to be having an easier time in qualifying than Perez has the last couple weeks. His seat is not in any danger of being replaced by midsummer. He is contracted to be a Red Bull driver till the end of 2024. I don't think they're going to buy him out, but you can start to see how the team is getting a little discouraged with his qualifying times as well as his race performance. His race performance hasn't been horrible, but it also hasn't been to the caliber that we expect from not only a Red Bull driver, but what we expect from Checo himself. We have seen him very consistent and very determined the last couple of seasons. He's in a slump. It happens to all athletes, whether it's professional, amateur, full-time, part-time, doesn't matter. I know that's the exact same thing, but it happens to everybody who competes in anything. He's in a bit of a slump. He just needs to remember that he is where he is because he's an amazing driver. He's on the best team in Formula One because of who he is. It's not because of his sponsorship money. It's because of how he drives and how consistent he can be. But today was just not his qualifying day at all. Bottom five for Q2. Perez in 15th. Logan Sargeant in 14th. Esteban Ocon in 13th. Stroll in 12th, Hulkenberg in 11th, everybody else kind of where they expected him to be. Logan Sargeant is becoming a little bit of a surprise for me. I gave him the least amount of hope at the beginning of the season just from his record and from how he was driving at the beginning of the season. Okay, that wasn't fair on my part, granted, and he's proving me wrong, which is an amazing to see. He has the upgrades that Alex Albon had last week on his car now, so he's doing very well in learning the car on a very quick and consistent basis. He's pulling in really good lap times. You don't see him make any silly mistakes. The car has been consistent. No mechanical breakdowns, no issues, no porpoising, anything like that. So expect to see Logan Sargeant not be in Q2 very often. I don't want to guarantee, but I would expect to see him in Q3 a little more often, or at least ever, from the second half of the season on. Which brings us to Q3. Really, really surprising Q3. Not the result, because Max always takes first. At least this season, he can do no wrong. Max takes first. Okay, congratulations. Yay! Moving on. McLaren. Like, I don't want to say out of nowhere, because they've been building to this, but it was this weekend where everything that McLaren did, they did right. They were There was no mistakes from anybody, Piastri or Norris. They're fast. They're consistent. That thing is on a rope. You turn, it's going with you. No sliding, no porpoising, no oversteering. I don't even think they missed an apex turn in qualifying at all, and they are fast. Now, when I say they're fast, and then the sentence and statement before I say Max won, yay, congratulations, it wasn't like Max blew him away. It wasn't like, hey, Max won qualifying by a half a second or a second and a half or anything like that. No, no. We're talking Max needed his last lap, no time, last sector to get qualifying on pole. And by that, he only got pole by 2/100ths of a second. That's how fast McLaren was in qualifying. It was absolutely ridiculous. And we're talking Norris and Piastri. It wasn't just the veteran that was putting in the work and putting down track times. It was Piastri. At one point, everyone has gone through. Max is the only one left on track. 1-2 is Norris and Piastri. They were set because they were putting in such good track times. Even with Max's previous lap, McLaren was set to go 1-2 at the beginning of the race. Like I said, it took Max the last sector to gain that kind of speed. And that sector, I believe, is like 200 meters. Like, absolutely no time whatsoever. And that's how close it came. 0.241 was the difference between Max and Norris. So we're talking the front end of a car, if that, maybe just the wing for how fast they're moving. That's how absolutely close they were. And it's great to see another team pushing the rest of the grid and, in my opinion, scaring the crap out of Max. He had his usual fantastic, amazing, super fast qualifying through 1-2 and 3. That's not to be unexpected from Max, but to see McLaren just, again, almost out of nowhere, challenge those times every single quali was fantastic to see and also very well deserved. They put in the time, they put in the effort, and they definitely needed that result to boost their confidence. Besides that, everybody else was essentially left in the dust after those three. Still great qualifying, no drama. Again, the track times were not as fast as you're used to seeing on a dry track. I don't want to say it was an off day for speed-wise, but maybe it was just one of those, the cars are going how the cars are going. Altitude, weather, you know, who knows. Top 10, Max, number 1, Norris, 2, Piastri is 3. Both Ferraris, Leclerc and Sainz, come in respectively 4 and 5. Both Mercedes, respectively, 6 and 7, Russell and Hamilton, Alex Albon in 8, Alex Albon in 9th, and Gasly in 10th. Pardon me, I read that wrong. Fernando Alonso in 9th, and then Pierre Gasly in 10th. Side note, Fernando Alonso came out like gangbusters. Aston Martin came out like a cannon at the beginning of the season. Now, I don't know it's because of the upgrades or it's because everybody else's upgrades or maybe they just hit the limit of the car and everybody else is just hitting theirs, but it doesn't seem like Fernando Alonso or Aston Martin has the dominance as they did at the beginning of the season. It is now two or three races now in a row where Alonso is not only not on the podium, he's barely hitting top five. Now, that brings to question, has Aston Martin out-upgraded themselves? And by that I mean, have the new upgrades that they've brought screwed them instead of helped them? Is it taking away the performance that the car had before just because they've got the new upgrades or they feel like they need to keep up with every other team? Because don't forget, just because you have an upgrade budget doesn't mean you have to use the upgraded budget. Generally, you do because it does help the car. But at what point do you stop using it because it's actually hurting the car? I think the upgrade packages that Aston Martin and the tweaks that Aston Martin has been doing to the cars are actually starting to hurt the performance, not necessarily help the performance. But again, it's only qualifying. He's still top 10. We all know that Alonso, he qualifies okay, but he races great. So we'll see where he ends up on race day. Folks, it is finally time. We are here. It is race day, the British Grand Prix. 52 laps, 18 turns, distance of 5.89 kilometers per lap. Top speed, 332.6 kilometers an hour. Fastest lap, 1 minute, 27.09 from Max Verstappen in 2020. Like I said, mentioned before, Bottas is starting at the back of the grid because he had absolutely no gas for testing at the end of Q3. To start, I know I always say it's good, it's fast, or it's clean, or there hasn't been a whole lot of drama when it comes to the start of the race. But this is definitely the exception rather than the rule, and it's not the type of drama you think about. There wasn't a crash, thankfully. Always happy that nobody crashes off the first turn or that nobody crashes in a race, period. But oh my God, that start was edge of your seat cheering, especially if you're a British fan. You're cheering, you're yelling, you're screaming. If you're a Dutch fan, you're cheering and you're screaming, but you're not so much. You're yelling and you're screaming, you're not so much cheering. Max Verstappen versus Lando Norris. On any other day, Max has taken that start 100%. He's got a faster car. Generally, his reaction is faster than anybody else on the grid, but it was not to be. The race gods were watching and they had decided that, you know what? No, Norris made it this far. He deserves the kind of start that every F1 driver can only dream about. Absolutely smokes Max off the start. Max had a horrible, horrible start because it's a standing start. So it's essentially 3-2-1 go. And Norris is like 3-2-1, here we go. And just absolutely takes off with Oscar Piastri going across track from left to right, right behind. And at one point, side by side with Max Verstappen going into the first turn. Piastri backs off a little bit. He's in no position to challenge on the inside corner. Very, very intelligent move from Piastri. He may be a rookie, but he's got the intelligence to know when he should challenge for those corners and when he should leave those corners. Very intelligent move from him. Lando Norris is not giving up that start, not come hell or high water, and he kept it for, you know, the first five laps, but still, it was very much, that's not Norris in the lead. There's no way. Oh, he smoked Max, and he's defending around the first five corners. It was fantastic to see. At one point, he was 1.8 seconds ahead of Max Verstappen, which is light years for everybody else. It was an amazing start. It was a fantastic beginning to the race, and then it went back to the way it normally would. But okay, spoiler alert, yay, Max wins. Congratulations, we're just going to get that out of the way. Took him five laps to pass. It was a straight line pass, which we all know Red Bull has the fastest straight line speed compared to anybody on the grid, period. Like any car. 19 more cars, they're not beating Max straight down the line because Red Bull is a much more dominant straight line speed kind of car. No hesitation, no drama, just pulled from right to left and just right past him. Okay, congratulations. But to see the determination and to see the skill and to see the fact that McLaren had decided that, nope, we qualified well, we're not going to give this up, come hell or high water, we are going to race this to the end, was fantastic to see. Norris, a little bit of no man's land from the beginning of the race, well, from after Max passes him to the end of the race, Norris is in a little bit of no man's land. He is faster than everybody else, and we're talking the closest competitor is, I think it was like 1.5 to 2.4 seconds, so just out of DRS zone, but still kind of, he doesn't have to defensively drive, but he's got to pay attention enough to keep the pace, and he can't quite catch Max. He is in that 3.4 second distance between him and Max, which is the closest anybody has been all season, and we're talking by the very end, Max only won by less than 4 seconds, which is, I mean, that's the least amount of time, like I said, through the entire season. So Norris is kind of in that gray zone. Okay, I'm driving by myself, but I'm not. You keep it consistent. You do a proper tire change, and then you're set to the races. Normally with the British race, the British Grand Prix, you do two pit stops. You change tires twice just because of track conditions and tire degradation. But because of the weather and because of how much these drivers can take care of their tires, all of a sudden, the strategies change. It is a one-stop race now, which adds a totally different dynamic to it and adds a little bit more stress and time-sensitive tire changes to that race. Alpine with their new upgrades, on the other hand, not exactly a wonderful race. Lap 10, Esteban Ocon all of a sudden can't finish the race. He has to retire the car. We still haven't found out why yet, which means they don't know why yet, but he was able to make it all the way around the track, limping along, as it were. Very low power. I don't think he could get out of first gear. Made it all the way around to pit lane, and then he was told that, hey, we've got to retire the car. Obviously devastating for Alpine as well. Pierre Gasly, a little bit of an incident later on in the race. He lost a wing from one kind of collision. It was more of a he's too close to the person ahead of him. Takes off his wing, and then he bumps into somebody else because he had lost that part of the right side of his wing. It didn't look super bad, but he ended up absolutely messing up his rear suspension. You could tell that car was not driving straight. It wasn't driving safely, so they retired the car instead of being told they couldn't continue. Really, really horrible day for Alpine at the British Grand Prix. Normally, historically, they do quite well at the British Grand Prix. They do score points that are usually in the top 10, if not always, when it comes to this race. It was just, you know what, just not meant to be this time. Again, track times, they weren't smokingly fast. They weren't shockingly slow, but they were closer to what we expected them to be. The track times and the time difference between the drivers were a little bit closer than what we're normally seeing, a half a second, quarter of a second, those sorts of things. Again, you weren't seeing the thousandth of a second difference like you would normally see, but the track temperature had much improved compared to qualifying the day before. And because of that, the track is usually pretty good on those tires. Again, we see the top three guys of this race, and we're talking Max, Norris, and Russell. They're taking their tires much, much, much further than even Pirelli thought they could. Again, perfect example. Soft tires, usually good between 12 and 17 laps, which is why they put in a two-stop race, which is why the strategy is two stops. Yeah, well, that didn't exactly happen. We're talking the top five guys, 17 laps for soft tires. We'll change them out around about lap 35. So again, doubling the life of the soft tires to make it a one-stop strategy to essentially force the rest of the grid to change strategies, that if you have any chance of catching up whatsoever, you have to go from a two-stop to a one-stop, but manage your tires correctly. Just because these three guys can do it doesn't mean the rest of the grid can do it, and the majority of the grid can't do it. Especially, I hate to pick on him, but especially Haas. Haas is horrible at tire lifespan. They just demolish those tires. Like, when it says 12 laps, you're maybe making 13 or 14 laps. That is it. They're not stretching the tires to the limit. They are just demolishing them. Now, whether it's the driver or the car setup or both, don't really know. But like I said, Max, Norris, Russell, these guys are notorious for extending tire life and changing the strategy of the race. Now, the way these guys were driving, that should have been the only pit stop. Schedule a pit stop, you're good to go, drive to the rest of the drive to the end of the race. But lap 33, K-Mag didn't quite finish the race. And by didn't quite, I mean it was a good old, what they call good old 1980s blowout. Driving along, big puff of blue smoke coming out of the back of the engine. And then by the time he stops the car, and by the time he gets out, we go from smoking to visible flame to the on-track safety guys using fire extinguishers to actually, you know, fire extinguish the car, make sure the flames are out. He pulled off to the side, which is great because K-Mag has got that driver sense. He goes all the way across the track when it's safe, ends up on the grass on the outside of the track so they don't have to bring out a red flag, which is fantastic. And all they have to do is bring out a full safety car. Now, unfortunately, where he stopped ended up being an extended safety car time. So he crapped out lap 33, okay? Safety car didn't come in for another six laps, not till lap 39. By that time, our head guys, the top four, obviously, and most of everybody else went in for new tires. Now, this is definitely at the time where this is the last tire you're going to get, and this is what you're going to finish the race on. So your strategy has to be ridiculously on point. We know the strategist for Red Bull, she hasn't missed a beat. She has been perfect for the last two seasons. No reason to think she will not be perfect in this strategy call right now. Max, soft tires. That's what I would have done. The track conditions are perfect. The weather is holding off dark clouds in the distance, but if there was drizzle, nobody reported it. If they did, it was all of 7 drops, and then you're done. You stick to the soft tires. They're not going to last the longest, but the best grip, best lap time, faster speed. Hamilton comes in, soft tires, all right? Veteran move, classic move, easy move. You got that many laps left, soft tires. You can stretch them out to that end, okay? Norris and Piastri, McLaren. This was, in my opinion, their only mistake they made, and it wasn't even the driver's decisions, okay? Your two veterans have gone for soft, okay? Realistically, these two drivers, Norris and Piastri, have never been in this situation. You're in the top four. You have the potential to win the race. You are that close to the leaders, okay? At this point, Max is first, Norris is second, Hamilton's third, Piastri's fourth, okay? Really good chance of getting a double podium. You don't want to mess this up. So with the track conditions and everything else like I've described, what would you choose? Hard, medium, or soft? Right? Soft. That's what I'm thinking too. Unfortunately for McLaren, and they tried to justify this decision, and I don't agree with them on this one, they give both Piastri and Norris hard tires. And I'm sitting there going, why? Why would you do that? Hard tires last the longest, okay? Soft tires last the shortest. But to get your wheels up to temperature, the harder the compound, the longer it takes, which means you don't have as much grip or pace as you would with a soft tire. If you're on a soft tire, you need one lap, and you've got your grip, your tires stay up to temperature, and you're off to the races. No pun intended. If you've got hard tires, that can take 3 or 4 laps to get your hard tires up to temperature and grip. The two things that saved McLaren at the British Grand Prix is, one, the safety car was so long. It was, in my opinion, probably about 3 laps too long. But because of the length of the safety car, McLaren was able to get their hard tires up to temperature, which means they're pretty close to being on par with the soft tires. They're where they need to be. Okay, so now the hard tires are usable. Second, the defensive driving and the calm, cool, and collected nature of Lando Norris driving and defending against the 7-time champion Lewis Hamilton is what gave him the podium that he got. Spoiler alert. To see Norris defend against Hamilton was, I'm going to use the term masterclass, just because of the fact that it was such a tire, tire difference that he was behind. He was on the back foot when it came to tire selection, and he had to work with it. He also knew that he had the car to do it, and he didn't let the nerves get to him. It was at least 4 laps where you're looking at just not quite back and forth, but you could see the defending getting more intense and Hamilton not panicking, but really putting that pressure on Norris, going, I'm going to make you make a mistake until the end. I'm going to make you make a mistake, and then I'm going to take that higher podium, and then that's how the race is going to end. To Norris's credit, he absolutely killed it. He stayed calm. He defended very, very well. His tires were in the optimum performance time and temperature, and that's how he was able to hold off, and it was fantastic to see. Another amazing battle back and forth. Last 2 laps, Alex Albon and Leclerc. In my time, in my generation, if you were to say a Williams would have defended against a Ferrari and won, you would have been laughed at. They would have told you that you don't know Formula One, that you don't know racing, and you don't know the history of, you know, you don't know the history of Ferrari. It would have been one of those BS type of conversations. But to see the zone that Alex Albon is in and to see how much improvement the Williams car has, we are now in the generation and we are now in the racing world of a Williams can defend and beat a Ferrari on even playing field or not. No crashes, no drama, no advantage, nobody screws up strategy. In my opinion, a Williams will beat a Ferrari now at least 7 out of 10 times. And plus, when you throw the defensive driving skills of Alex Albon, it is just a ridiculous thing to see. It was amazing. No matter what Leclerc tried, no matter what he did, it didn't work. Even when Alex missed the apex of a turn, he was off racing line, so he was a little bit slower. He was able to recover, and he was able to defend until the end of the race. It was fantastic to see. I see that this British Grand Prix being a turning point for the Williams team from here on out, going, hey, we can defend against the upper teams. We can be in the top 10. We're scoring points more consistently, and our upgrades are working because they took their time and they did them properly. Second half of the season, I see Williams gaining more points in the constructors. I see Logan Sargeant getting his first points of the year at some point. And I also see Alex Albon finally cracking the top 5 in points. It's just amazing. And it wasn't a recovery drive from Albon. He qualified in the top 10. He finished in the top 10. Where he qualified was about where he finished, actually. Yeah, he finished, qualified 8, finished 8. So, I mean, for a Williams, that's an amazing drive. For any of the quote-unquote middle grid to lower grid teams, that's an amazing feat. And I'm not even going to consider Williams to be a lower end grid team anymore, just because of the performance of the last couple weeks and because where I think they will be going with the rest of their upgrades. And when Logan Sargeant feels even more comfortable in the car. Now, going from Alex Albon, who's feeling comfortable in the car, to somebody who is kind of feeling comfortable in the car but needs a race day to actually feel it, Checo Perez started 15th, and he pulled his usual from-behind race finish. It wasn't anything spectacular. He still had okay pace first half of the race. Second half of the race, though, he had much better pace for some reason. I didn't quite see the switch. It seemed to click a little bit better for him. He was making better passes. He was consistent. He wasn't overly aggressive. It was a good recovery from him. That's pretty much all I can say for Checo. I mean, he made up 11 spots. He made it into 6th. I mean, that's great. It's not the Checo that we know. Sorry, my math is awesome. He made up 9 spots, not 11. But still, it's one of those, you should be starting in 6th and finishing 2nd. You should be starting 2nd and finishing 2nd. We know he's got the ability. We know he's got the car. It's just, he can't seem to get out of his own way. There was nothing wrong with his drive, but at the same time, there was nothing spectacular with his drive. He just went around and around passing. The majority of his passing was done when people were doing pit stops. Pit stops were an average of 21 seconds. That's where he made up the majority of his time. So it was another point race for him, but not a very mentally successful race for him. By the end of the race, the British crowd was definitely, it was nice to see they were up on their feet, yelling, cheering, screaming. Within the top 3, they had 2 homegrown boys, which was fantastic to see. Yes, Max wins the race again. Less than 4 second gap, which was nice to see that he wasn't able to just walk away with it. That at some point he did have to try at least a little bit at the beginning. But overall, it was a great race. Fantastic to see. I like the British Grand Prix. There's usually a little bit of drama with whether it's crashes or safety cars, red flags, or in this case, just amazing driving at the beginning and the middle of the race. It's always one of my favorites. Top 10. Max, number 1. Norris, 2. Hamilton, 3. Piastri, 4. George Russell in 5th. Perez in 6th, Fernando Alonso in 7th, Albon in 8th, Leclerc in sights, respectively 9 and 10. it's finally great to see a couple of guys moving up in there, especially again the McLaren team. It was fantastic, especially for Piastri. He was so close to getting his very first podium. Again, because he was on those hard tires, he wasn't quite able to keep up with Hamilton. But at the same time, the gap was not 7, 8, 9, 10 seconds. Again, we're talking less than 3 seconds difference. So a little bit of a strategy change maybe next time, and we'll see our first McLaren double podium, I'm hoping. Driver's standings as it stands. Max, number 1, with 255 points. Perez in second with 156. Fernando Alonso still hanging in there with third with 137 points. Hamilton starting to catch up in fourth with 121 points. Sainz in fifth with 83 points. Russell in sixth with 82 points. Leclerc in seventh with 74 points. Lance Stroll, Lando Norris are now officially tied, or they're close. Lance Stroll is 44 points. Norris, 42 points. Esteban Ocon in 10th with 31. Constructors' Championships, a little bit of movement now. Red Bull first with 411. Mercedes second with 203. Aston Martin in third with 181. Ferrari is still in fourth with 157. McLaren now leapfrogs. They are now in fifth with 59 points. Alpine is dropped one to sixth with 47 points. Williams is up to seventh with 11 points. They are tied with Haas that also have 11 points. They're in eighth. Alfa Romeo drops to 9th with 9 points, and good old AlphaTauri holding up the basement, 2 points. And this part of the podcast and the part of the episode, I would normally give you the story of the race. And I think I've kind of beat it to death. It's McLaren, their second position and fourth by the end of the race. Again, on merit, their new packages, the teamwork. My only question at this point, and I brought it up during the upgrade part of the episode, is that is this dumb luck race-wise, or is this a lasting result? I think a little bit of luck was in here, but I think the luck mainly fell on the Oscar Piastri side and not nearly as much as the Lando Norris side. Norris has got the experience. Yes, he's still super young, but he's got that little bit more maturity. He's not a rookie anymore. He's been around the block. He's been racing against the top of the top for quite a while now, so the luck I said would be on Oscar Piastri, almost his first podium in his first rookie season or his rookie season. That generally, it doesn't happen very often. And when it does, it's a very special moment, granted. But I would expect to see Oscar Piastri in the top 10, but not necessarily in the top 5 for the rest of the season. Again, unless the third package they bring out is just absolutely amazing. I do see this as a lasting result. Now, that being said, I don't think we're not going to see a hiccup every now and again from McLaren, because each team has moments like that. They do make mistakes. They do have hiccups. They do have technical difficulties. You name it, most teams will get it. And I think this will happen. This will happen. I know this will happen to McLaren at some point. But the lasting result of them being in the top 10 and in the top 5, that is a lasting result in my opinion. It will take Piastri a little bit longer to get to the top 5 more consistently than Lando Norris, but they're going to do it again, and they're going to do it in spectacular fashion, and may not be this year just because Max is so confident and so dominating, but definitely next year you will see a McLaren at the top of the pile, podium number 1, definitely next season. If not, maybe they might squeak one out this season. You never know. And folks, that is it. That is the breakdown of the 2023 British Grand Prix. Next race, next weekend, everybody. We're talking the weekend of July 21st and 23rd. It is the Hungarian Grand Prix qualifying here in Canada, Saturday, 8 a.m. Again, not really early, which is fantastic. The race is Sunday at 7 a.m. Again, not too bad. The Hungarian Grand Prix can either go one of two ways from my experience. Fantastic weather, great racing. Shit weather, questionable at best if they actually should race. But I am very, 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 very excited to see the Hungarian race next week. And with that, I would like to personally thank everybody for tuning into the newest episode of F101. And please tune in next week for all you need to know about the Hungarian Grand Prix. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, all you wonderful, wonderful F1 fans around the country and around the world. It is race weekend again, and it is week two of our four-week stint just before the summer break. We're talking about the British Grand Prix, but more importantly, if you're hearing my voice, that can only mean two things. One, that my name is Kelsey, and two, you have tuned in to the newest episode of F101. As always, we're going to start off with the hot topics this week. This is everything you need to know in and around the world of F1. Well, one of the major things that everybody needs to know about is that we are seeing probably the last of the major upgrade packages from the teams before the summer break. Now, it is broken up into the summer break for upgrades because the major ones come out in the first half. This is where the guys spend the majority of their money. Their hard-earned time goes into a big upgrade package. We're talking wings, front wings, rear wings, chassis, side pods, you name it. That's when they're going to put the majority of their time and effort into those major upgrades. Second half of the summer break, you're going to see a lot more tweaks. Not necessarily upgrades, but we're talking tweaks from the information that they gained from the first half of the season. Now, it is a little daunting to do that when you are releasing packages two races before the summer break. Now, that means that this is probably the more important ones that you want, or the least important upgrades that they wanted to do this year, which means these ones will probably have the least amount of tweaks and upgrades to them. So let's just get right into it. Right off the bat, we're talking Alpine. They've got a new front wing. This is a specific low-speed race upgrade. Now, the majority of the races for the second half of the season, depending on who you talk to, and this is my personal opinion, it's more low-speed performance racing, which means there's a lot more corners. There are straight stretches where you can hit that 300 kilometers an hour mark, but not as many as the first part of the season. I think this front wing upgrade for Alpine has come a couple races too late. Alpine has been performing quite well. I do think they should have released this wing if it was ready for more along the lines of Monaco, just because Monaco is the definition of a low-speed performance track. Yeah, and you're saying, but we watched Monaco and they get up to some ridiculous speeds. That is true, but it's also a more technical course for a team like Alpine where they're not going to be as fast as your Ferraris, your Mercedes, and your Red Bulls. So I think this would have been a slightly more better upgrade, and that's good English right there. For the Alpine team around Monaco. From here on out, you've got places like Spa, you've got places like the Hungarian Grand Prix, you've got COTA in the States, that's in Austin, Texas, you've got Vegas. These races do have some technical aspects to them, but the majority of the races from here on out are going to be more of a top speed, flat out, big arching corner type races. But hey, hopefully this will bring Alpine a little bit closer to getting into the mid-grid. And who knows, the second half of the season, they may have bring out some more upgrades or tweak it that will absolutely benefit their front wing design. Next up, Alfa Romeo. They've got four new upgrades. They got new rear suspension. They've got new rear brake ducts. They got a new diffuser, and they've got themselves a new floor. So all of this tells me is that they are not happy with their aerodynamic downforce that they have on the car itself. You don't do this type of upgrade altogether without it being essentially a not one size fits all, but a must complete together package. You can't do one without the other. You can't do one and two without doing three and four. It wouldn't do the car any good. Now, when I say rear brake ducts, everyone's like, well, you don't really see it. How important can it be? Well, a couple of the cars, Alfa Romeo and Aston Martin, have done the exact same thing as they've upgraded their brake ducts, especially and specifically for airflow over the brakes themselves. So because these cars go so fast and they have such brake power and they're so heavy, you need to have ridiculously good and clean airflow over those brake pads, rotors, just the brake system set up as much as humanly possible while not sacrificing time and weight. So what they keep doing is they keep upgrading it to help encourage airflow over the brakes, over the pads to cool them off. There's been some instances that you can see in the past, and there was a couple instances in the earlier part of the season where they'll do their practice lap before the race, They'll stop, they'll get ready to go, and you can see some smoke coming from what looks like the tires. The tires aren't smoking. This is how hot the brake pads and the rotors get. So obviously that means the better airflow you get over these areas, the cooler your brakes are going to be, the more effective they're going to be, and the safer they will be as well during the race. So that's Alfa Romeo. Aston Martin, new front wing, and then like I just mentioned, they've got a new cooling arrangement for the rear brake ducts. The way the Aston Martin has got designed is that they're not necessarily worried about the front brake ducts just because it is in the front and it goes right behind the wings. So the wings supply fresh air to the brake ducts. It's more when you get to the back and the rear wings or the rear brakes where the body composition of the car really, really important on how well it cools the brakes. And well, it's just little tweaks, little things like that you do to the brake ducts, not necessarily the entire chassis of the car. It just wouldn't make sense. So a couple more upgrades from there. Haas has got a new beam wing upgrade. So if you remember, I had mentioned this earlier, the beam wing in the back is essentially, it does two things. One, it supports the actual wing in the back of the car, so it keeps its structural integrity, because sometimes you'll see when a car goes sideways, does donuts, when they lose control on the back of the car, you see the wing shuffle back and forth really violently. So what this rear wing does is it helps support the wing so it doesn't crumble over the G-force and the impacts and all that sorts of stuff. But what it also does is it also helps give more downforce when the air is coming off the back of the car and you want to shoot that air out as quickly as possible. So Haas has upgraded this wing. It is a little bit more angled down. It is also a little bit wider as well within the rules. They've also changed their front suspension shrouding, which means that over the suspension itself, it's not like a normal suspension on a car that you have or I have, or motorbikes or trucks or anything like that. This suspension is built very specifically to help the airflow go over the car. Essentially, what they've done is they've turned the front suspension into little mini wings that will give more downforce to the car itself by directing the airflow over the car itself at a much faster pace. Obviously, you want as much downforce as possible. It gives you grip, it gives you speed, which means it gives you points. AlphaTauri this weekend has the most upgrades so far this half of the season, I guess you could say, and especially in this race. They've got a new floor body. So not necessarily the floor underneath the car itself, but it's more along the edges and the geometry of the floor itself. So you're going to see it's not going to be nearly as spiky, or it's going to be a little more rounded, it's going to be a little more angled up or angled down. AlphaTauri has been struggling with this damn car the entire year. Red Bull has got it right. You would think AlphaTauri being the sister team that they would be a little closer than where they are. Absolutely total opposite. So it kind of looks like they're starting not from the bottom up, but they're taking some serious out of the box thinking, and they're also taking some serious risks in changing things like this so late in the season. They've also removed the beam wing flap. So they have determined that the beam wing that they have is not as beneficial with the downforce as, let's say, Haas. They've upgraded theirs. They've made it more aerodynamic. The AlphaTauri has totally taken the flap off. It's just a bar that goes across the wing in the back for stability, and that's literally it. AlphaTauri has also changed their new front wing. Everything's starting to look a little slimmer. The angles are not being as aggressive as they thought they needed to be the first part of the season. So what they've done, if you're looking straight on at the Formula One car, you'll see those individual sections on the wing itself that are held together by like little tabs. So what they've done is they've moved the tabs over, and we're talking like an 18th of an inch. Like, it's not a massive change. But what they've also done, which is more important for the wing itself, is they've taken away the angle that those flaps are on. It's not so much of a down to up. It's more now of a straight over concept, just to give a little bit more downforce to the car itself, to give a little bit more aerodynamic advantage to them, or at least they hope. And the most intriguing upgrade that I have found on the AlphaTauri is that they've changed the rear wing construction and weight placement, which you don't hear very often when it comes to a Formula One team. So normally with the rear wing, you want that weight to be as even as possible. So when you hit the DRS button, the wing moves at a very consistent rate and you get that additional 20 kilometers an hour boost. But What AlphaAtari has done is they've made the center of the wing substantially heavier. And when I say substantially, I'm talking like grams. Like, it's not pounds or kilos. It's like grams. So they put the majority of the weight at the center of the wing, and they have made the side of the wings much lighter, which tells me just from a pure observational side that the wing itself wasn't dropping at a consistent and even rate, which means that they hit the DRS button and maybe the left side went down before the right side, or the right side went down before the left, or there was a slight pause before it dropped together. So from what I'm seeing here, what they've done is they've put the majority of the weight in the center of the wing. So no matter where you are, turning left, right, center, whatever the case may be, that the center will drop much faster and the sides, because they're lighter, will drop at the exact same time. Hopefully giving them, I think they're looking for a more consistent DRS, not advantage, but operating system. To me, this looks like more of an in-house project than a performance project. They've noticed a couple of issues here and there amongst the numbers, or someone slowed a camera down going, hey, this wing is not dropping properly. It's a fundamental fix. It's a dumb fix, but it should be a fix that needs to be addressed. And last but not least, the last team that had put on at least substantial upgrades, we're talking about McLaren. This is part two of their three-part kit release. I think they've done this in a very intelligent way. For this race, they've got a new front wing, front nose, and they have revised the rear brake ducts. Again, putting more airflow over the brakes, and again for the front wing and the nose, making it a little bit more aerodynamic. Also, when you make it more aerodynamic, you make it more stable. So a more stable car is definitely the type of car that you want. Now, going back to their release program, essentially, they're, like I said, they're parts two of three. I think for the way McLaren started, they know they were behind the eight ball. They knew their car sucked. The drivers knew it, the fans knew it, and management knew it. But in keeping with the spirit of McLaren and how hard they work, they told everybody, just, we know it's horrible, but just take a breath, relax. We have an upgrade plan that we're going to introduce at the right time when the development is ready throughout the season. I think they have done this in the best form from any team on the grid. They've taken their time. Maybe it took them a little longer than they would like, but I don't know what their timeline is. But they've done it properly. They've done it consistently, and it's starting to work. They're getting more consistent. They're getting faster. The car is performing heads and shoulders above what it was before. And I think once they finally release the last set of the package, which I don't see them releasing the 3 of 3 package before the summer break, I think they're going to take the time the last two races of the first half of the season, collect the upgrades and the information they need for what the upgrades they've put on the car already, and then they're going to crunch the math going, okay, maybe we need to tweak this part when we add this new part, or hey, that new part we're about to put on in 3 weeks' time is totally going to negate and screw things up. Let's go back to the drawing board. We've got the time. They've got the budget. Let's do this right. Let's tweak it. Let's take our time. I think that was definitely the more intelligent way to go for McLaren. Looking at it from a fan's point of view, I could totally have seen them panicking, and as a fan panicking, going, oh my God, the car is horrible. We're going to be last on the grid. You need to put all these upgrades out like absolutely now. So just so we can keep up, and so we can, you know, not be the laughing stock of Formula One. But considering the fact and remembering the statistics, the slower you put out your upgrade package, the better time you put into it, the more successful you're going to be in the second half of the season. In my opinion, the second half of the season is more important than the first half. Why? Because if you have a more consistent car with consistent upgrades, you're going to incur less penalties when you have to replace, let's say, engine parts or cooling parts, or you know, your part list that you're allowed to have. You're not nearly going to dig deep into that as you would say a Ferrari or maybe a Mercedes or even a Red Bull. And not forgetting that Red Bull's wind tunnel time is set to start dropping off substantially for the second half of the season. So McLaren realizing that it is a marathon and not a sprint, I think is definitely going to help them later on in the season when they start climbing the points, when Piastri and Norris start scoring points, not only for themselves in the Drivers' Championship, but also for the team and the constructors. It wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility in my mind that if we started to see McLaren in easily the top five for the Constructors' Championships. Now, will they catch Red Bull? Absolutely not. Are they going to catch Aston Martin and, let's say, Ferrari? It's a little more realistic, but they got to start putting up much more consistent points and hoping that Aston Martin and Ferrari start falling apart further on in the season. And finally, the last thing that you need to know, which is very important for the rest of this season and going into next season, and also brings up a very important question, is this. Pirelli is introducing new construction to the pre-existing compound of tires that they have, which means, essentially, they're upgrading how they make the soft, the medium, and the hard tires. So Pirelli is always on the innovation goal. They want to get better tires. They test new tire compounds and construction throughout the season. Pirelli also had their own goals to be like, oh, these tires should last these many laps. These tires should last these many laps. We hope they don't do A, B, and C, all this kind of stuff, their own research. They also have put in the amount of research where the tires can withstand more downforces and they can withstand more speed and wear and tear. Because, remember, the cars are lighter and the tires are bigger. So the construction totally had to change. Well, Pirelli had released that because of the new cars in the 2023, the more downforce and how much more they're beating up on the tires, because these are the fastest cars with the most downforce in Formula One history, that they've essentially maxed out the tires and their performance already this half of the season, which is kind of understandable and yet a little shocking at the same time. You're thinking, okay, race 7, 8, 9, whatever the case may be. Pirelli came out to say that their tires were essentially maxed out in the third race of this season because the aerodynamic forces and just everything that goes into the cars, they're not having a hard time to keeping up, but they have to work a lot faster than they thought they had to. So I expect Pirelli to do a lot more tire testing for the second half of the season. I also expect to see if they can't come out with another tire or a better upgraded tire than what they have now for the last half. I don't want to say expect, and I'm not hoping for this, but I am anticipating to see a couple of tire failures at the second half of the season. It's a faster season. It's a lot warmer temperatures, which sometimes the tires love and sometimes the tires don't. But overall, the tires themselves have been doing quite well. We have noticed some races where Max Verstappen will take a soft tire that's supposed to be done on 27 laps. He'll take it all the way down to 53 laps, and then he'll change up. So the tires are holding up, but apparently they're just on the limit. And when you have drivers like Lando Norris, Verstappen, Hamilton, Perez, where their tire management is far superior to the rest of the group, you can see why Pirelli's kind of going, ha, 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 we need to come up with something new and better, and we need to do it now. And on that topic, that brings up a question that I had posted or put forward a few weeks ago, which I will bring up again. Would it necessarily be bad to have a tire war in Formula One again? And for those of you who had missed this concept, let me reiterate it. A tire war would mean that it would be Pirelli and another tire manufacturer in Formula One. Whether it be a BF Goodrich, whether it be Allstone, like whatever the case may be, the possibility of having two tire manufacturers is not necessarily new. They did it in the 80s and the 90s. It was a good thing and it was a bad thing. There's always an ups and down. The competition is good, but there's also a possibility of having one company that gets it absolutely right and one team that gets it, or one company that gets absolutely wrong. Therefore, half the field has an advantage, half the field has a disadvantage, so on and so forth. Take your pick. I feel that we should revisit it and at least give it some kind of trial in the 2024-2025 season. Let's say 25-26 season. We've got a few new teams coming in, and why not bring back the idea of tire wars just to see if the evolution has gotten better from other teams, from other companies. If it'll bring a new level of competition and maybe potentially level out the playing field just a little bit. Pirelli has done a fantastic job. They've gone through their growing pains. I'm not going to deny them that. But they've also done a very good job as well. Can't deny that either. The best example for me was 2021. Lewis Hamilton. It was an absolutely pouring race. He was on full wets, and he ended up winning the race, essentially turning the all-wet tire into a 100% slick tire, taking the rubber off, taking the grip off 100%, and turning it into a new slick tire type. And the tire held up. Pirelli didn't release a statement. Hamilton was extremely happy with the way the tires worked. So, I mean, there's always an up and down, but what do you guys think? Do you think that we need another tire company in Formula One again, bring back the 80s and 90s type competition, or do you think that it will be more detrimental to the sport than beneficial?